Well, welcome to the studio, Alan.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. All right. So just to give the audience a little context, we know each other through Bedros Killian, and we met just over a year prior at Black Site Ranch out there in Temecula, California.
Yeah, it was.
Yes.
But it was fun.
It was a wet trip. Now that you bring that up. Yes. I had to do the shoot house at the very end of the day. I think it was like 6 p.m. and it was in the mud.
It was full of water. That's what it was.
Yes. Yep. That was a rough day, but it was a good time. That was a great adventure for me. And it was also great because I got to meet you and we've continued to stay in touch over time. And I've gotten to know more about you and, you are the founder of the Warrior's Path. You not only have your own martial arts school, but you're also an author. You're also a scuba instructor. You're also a mountaineer. You're also, I mean, the list goes on. It's insane. I can't wait for the audience to kind of hear your story and your journey. I'm also a fan of your podcast, The Warrior's Path. You have a YouTube channel, which I'm a fan of. I keep up to date on episodes and, yeah, of course. There was an episode I was watching the other day. Actually, I can't remember if it was one of your own episodes or you were a guest on someone else's show, but you were talking about your journey into fitness. I think started at 14 years old, and you picked up that job by you started working out in the gym by getting a job cleaning the gym or volunteering to clean the gym.
Yeah, do I have it right? You know, they wouldn't let you officially work at 14 at that time.
Right.
And so I had to go and work for the owner. His name was Carter Stacy, and the place is called the Fitness Factory. And he would have me come in and clean on the weekends. You know, he insisted that you don't do it during the week. He's like, you need to go to school, do your homework, you know, and I know you're training. So I was the guy that came in and cleaned everything over the weekends so that I could have access to the gym through the week.
That is awesome. Such a great mindset to have at 14 years old. That is so cool. I knew a local person that did that at there's a hot yoga studio that someone was would do kind of the same thing. I think that's a great mindset to have as a young person.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have the relationship with him. And I mean, in the people I met at the gym at that time, I used to work out with a guy. He was an evangelist, and he had a golden tongue, and he was just running his mouth the entire time I was training.
Wow.
I'm doing a bench press and he just didn't stop, you know, the whole time. And he's just talking smack. That guy taught me how to talk smack.
Wow.
Just from having to listen to him for 2 or 3 years.
That's awesome. So, well, that was your journey into fitness, which I think is great. I too started, well, I didn't start out at a gym, but I got my worker's permit at 15. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, you got a jump start at 14. That's even better. And you got to work out for free. So cool. But that wasn't, were you already into martial arts back then or?
Yes, I officially started just before my 11th birthday.
Wow.
You know, at that time, a letter was sent home to mom, and it was a request to put me on drugs so they could control me at school. They've hung words on it since then, ADHD, and that sort of thing. And to me, it's a superpower. But at the time, it's like, you've got to do something with this child. And my mom was opposed to drugs. So she started to look around for options. And she found the local karate studio. They taught Ishinru Karate, and they were teaching it out of a fallout shelter at the local community college.
Wow.
And first night I went in, met the owner, and he had two sons. And they had grown up in this culture. They were obviously good at what they did. And by the end of the night, I ended up sparring with them, and they tore me up. I remember it to this day because I loved it. I mean, I knew that's what I was going to do the rest of my life. These were my people. And I was bought and sold after that.
That was 11 years old.
Yeah. I was, you know, you normally hear the story, I was bullied, and so therefore, I was a rowdy individual, high energy. Mom would say I used to fight everything. I'd fight going to sleep, I'd fight eating. I didn't want to agree with anything. And I enjoyed, you know, rough housing, physical play. And if you couldn't do that at school, you would get in trouble. But, you know, here I could go to this place and do what I normally would get in trouble for, and it was okay. And they actually, you know, invited it. They're like, bring it on in. And it gave me a place to channel it and, you know, use it in a positive way.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because the way, as you describe all of this, I, meeting you just over a year ago, you're one of the most peaceful, calm people that I've ever met. And we just stood there and had a conversation in the rain. It was just you and I. I was looking for a bathroom. I think I had escaped the group, and I thought that you worked there. I thought that you worked on the grounds because you were just kind of like overseas. You were just standing there like this, just kind of on your own. I'm just like, excuse me. And then we just got into a conversation and one thing led to another. And it was a great conversation. But yeah, you are one of the most like at peace people I think I ever met, like in a moment like that. It was pretty cool. And then I got to know you. Yeah. I got to know you a little bit more, and you've accomplished so much. I think that, you know, I'm just 4 years in, 4 years in on my journey. And it's just like, it's a lifelong commitment. It's ever evolving, you know, and there's dips and there's ebbs and flows, and it's not my career, so I don't get to do it as often, you know, as I'd like to, but there's times that you can dial in more and there's times that you have to dial back. So I was also listening to another interview you gave recently, and the term agent of change came up in that interview, and I was wondering if you would share your story about being an agent of change.
That came from a mother of one of the kids in the kids class. You know, when you're inside the academy, you're Sifu. You know, you're a motivator. Sometimes you're a counselor. Sometimes you're a janitor. And, you know, I always try to set a good positive example. And when opportunities pop up, I like to be prepared to make it a positive growth. And so one of those moments happened, a student asked a question of me in the lobby, and she was in the lobby waiting for her child to get out of the class. And I answered it and gave some feedback. And after he walked out the door, that's what she said. She goes, "You are an agent of change." And I was like, "Wow, I like how that sounds."
Yeah.
And, you know, it stuck. A couple other people in the office jokingly hung on to it. And it just stuck over the years and followed me.
Well, I believe that to be true about you. I think that that's the perfect description for you. You're definitely an agent of change. That's pretty powerful. And, you know, participating in the kids class, that's a, you know, it's, you're bringing empowerment, you know, to the littles. That's big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've raised a lot of them over the years.
Yeah. Now, do you have kids yourself? Do you have children?
I do not.
No. Okay. Gotcha. So how did you find your way to the Warrior's Path? Did you work previously with other schools before you launched Warrior's Path on your own? How did that shake down for you?
Warrior's Path, the roots of that system or that methodology came from learning life tools from my mentors and teachers over the years. And, you know, they weren't always lessons that I would get on the mat. A lot of times they would be in between classes. And one of my instructors would see maybe a challenge in class that you're having a difficult struggle with. He would stop me and say, "Hey, you ever thought about looking at it this way? Why don't you change your perspective and consider this point of view? And this is why, you know, because you're bettering yourself, you're growing." And I am an avid note taker. My garage is ridiculously full of boxes full of handwritten notes and moleskin books. And so I would jot these things down. You know, then I started to work toward becoming a professional martial artist, and I started teaching people myself and running academies. And though then I had the opportunity for those moments. And I am also a curriculum builder. You know, in education, you're constantly, how can I teach this better? How can I organize this in a way that's going to be more digestible? So, I recognize that I'm going to be having these moments. I wanted to be effective at it, and I wanted, to give good information. So I started to build my own curriculum around, life change and life tools that you could use to affect that change. And it wasn't something that I had a class for. And it's just, I started putting together on my own. And then years later, I had a whole manual of these things. And as a reference, really a reference tool for me. And that's actually what led to writing the first book. I had several people who would go into my office, and it is a rat's nest of notes, research. And they would, after they got to know me for a little while, the senior students, like, can we look at these things? I was like, sure, I don't care. So yeah. They'd start thumbing through it and go, what is this? And I, I call it the Warrior's Path program, and they're like, hey, would you teach this? I go, well, I kind of do one that pops up here or there. And they go, no, we would like a regular organized approach to it. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And that's when it started to become, a living thing all the way up to present day. And it's really more of a coaching program now. I have clients who, want to go through self-improvement. They want to make change in life, but they want to do it on a more of a warrior's path. There's different routes. You choose different mentors because you like how they think and what they represent. And that's my spin on growth. All of the tools I learned were, out of the martial science and that study. All of my mentors were in some way warrior-based or warrior-minded individuals. So that's what gave the program its flavor.
I like that. So what is the title of the first book then, The Warrior's Path?
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay. And then Is it a series, because there's more than just one book. So is it a series and volumes of Warrior's Path or more titles?
Well, book two, when I have a list of techniques that started to float to the surface, and I call them universal principles.
Okay.
And we'll commonly in the academy say they're the universal principles of change, because you can use them and apply them in martial arts, but they're also tools that could be applied in business, personal growth. So I didn't have room to put them all in the first book. So, and I started getting a request, well, what about the other ones? And that's led to book two, is kind of an extension of that list. So I guess the first two are connected to that program.
Cool. I like that. And I can tell you right off the bat, like as soon as I found my way into the school that I was training at, I told everybody, just giving jiu-jitsu a chance, that it's all encompassing. It was all encompassing for me. It still is. And personal, professional development, they're tied together with jiu-jitsu and the Warrior's Path. I get all of it. So any of the principles I was learning on the mats, I could apply at my business, in my office, in a meeting, in a relationship, out in the community. It all tied together for me. And I told everybody that. I was like, man, you got to get involved in that. It'll take you to the next level, not only for self-defense training or just, to warrior up, so to speak, but like to warrior up in life, like as a
metaphor.
Yeah, I really believe that. And like I said, I'm just a baby in jiu-jitsu. Just 4 years is,
You know what? That's okay. And I was thinking this when you were talking about it earlier, I only have time here. Sometimes I get to do more. The main thing is that you are implementing a warrior science into your life.
Yeah.
And, this used to be something that was common decades ago. You part of growing up and becoming a man was a study of some kind of warrior-based art. Yes, for the practical part of it, but they also knew, like what we're saying now, there's so many things that you can learn out of that study. And sometimes life will throw a situation at you, right? And, depending on how well you're doing with your own growth, and you might deal with it pretty good, or you might need a little work. And then, you might be another year or two before life throws another curveball.
Oh, yeah.
If you go to a jiu-jitsu class, you get a curveball two or three times, twice a week.
Well, it's very humbling. That's what I loved about it. It was like it builds you up, tears you down, builds you up, tears you down. You find some even keel. You know what I mean? It's like you graduate, but start over again. You know,
right. It's such a good environment, you know, when you realize that and, you know, you're not just seeing it as a self-defense study, so to say, and you're like, well, know that those life tools are in there. And you, when you get it, it's like, okay, cool. It's a place to, yeah.
When you can apply it, like when I would have those moments when I would be somewhere and I could literally apply something I learned on the mats into the moment I was in, that was like huge for me. I was like, wow, I really know, I can really attest to the fact that I'm getting benefits from this in every aspect of my life. It was so empowering. It also gave me the empowerment to kick down doors and dial it back at the same minute, in the same minute.
Yep.
It was pretty cool. Like literally. So it was, It's you know, it's an ever evolving journey, which I love. And it's for all ages, for men, for women. And I was, you know, so enthusiastic about it. I became friends with all of the trainers at my school, very close. I started training during COVID, actually. So that school was open. They didn't shut down. They did the Zoom classes. Right. So people could train at home, like with a pillow or a you know, whatever they had, a grappling dummy and what have you. Right. But that school was open and the instructors wanted to teach. And so like, I was one of the only ones that went in person. So I was getting, and I trained three times a day. So, awesome. Yeah, cause I feel like I pick up things a little bit slower sometimes. And that was one of the things I was trying to, I wanted to get good at, but I really wanted to understand things. And so I needed to get more heavily involved, I thought, for myself. And so I would go to the morning class, a private at noon, and then I would do the evening class too. But it was almost like they were all three privates because no one was coming, you know, to the in-person class. So it was like I'd have two instructors and maybe another student or two to, you know, to play That's with awesome. On the mirror. Yeah. So it was cool. So I filled up my my combatives card pretty quickly, and I trained and trained and trained and trained, and I was getting so good. I was so excited, and it was at a really low point in my life too. Well, COVID was awful for everybody, you know. I mean, everybody was affected, but my business was essential, so it continued to run, and I really needed to stay empowered for myself and for my team. Like I said, I became friends with the head instructor, the women's empowerment instructor, and a couple of other guys too. And I brought the mats to my studio here, and I had had them teach bystander intervention training to the ladies that were working in my studio, and some of my male employees. I sponsored them with jiu-jitsu memberships, and we had an in-office training day. We did that a couple of different times, brought the mats to the studio and the instructors, and it was pretty cool. I weaved everybody in, and everyone had a good time with that. It's very valuable. And usually when I find something that's that special to me, I want to extend it to others. And so I went overboard with it. I was like, everyone needs a membership.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, it's good. And I think I also, like my schedule gets crazy. I keep different hours. So I start my day at 2 a.m. So I also turned my garage into a gym back in 2020. So I have the mats and it's heated and cooled and all that. I've got weights and all the martial arts toys and all of those things. And so I get, and I have grappling dummies. So I train by myself a lot in the garage, but, you know, and then I just hired out the instructors to come train me at my place versus going to the school. But I am a huge advocate of the school. The school started to pick back up once restrictions went away, you know, throughout the COVID process, lockdown and all that. Yeah. And I was dipping out from the school experience at that time to train privately at home. So, but I do miss the camaraderie of the school. I think there's something to be said for the experience because it's quite a community. Maybe you could speak a little bit to the community that you have at Warrior's Path.
Oh yeah, it's you know, and I'll say this: if they're raised correctly. You know, and they understand that they are a team. It's one thing just to go, yeah, we're a team, but to have procedures, standard operating procedures for behavior as a team. That's something I always did inside the academy. And, you know, one of the main areas of education is failure. And, you know, when you first come in, sometimes you'll have a difficult time with failure. But in the academy, you start to realize that, man, I really, even though I failed, you know, and maybe the guy got me out and he's done this for 2 months in a row, but I finally figured out how to fix it. And so I had to fail a lot to get that truth. But now that I know that, I'm like, you know what? The quicker route to truth might be more failure. So I'm going to go over across the mat and I'm going to get that 275-pound guy and let's go. Yeah. But he has to know, you know, that what is going on. And because, you know, you can get injured, right?
Right.
And that takes us out of the educational environment. And we're all wisdom seekers. It's the nickname we give inside the academy. Is we'll say, hey, be a good wisdom seeker. That means have a good attitude about failure. And then understand that people who are coming in later in the journey are failing with you. You're not, you know, going to train on them. You're helping them too. And it's not to say you don't have days where it's go time, but we will clearly flag those as go times. And the rest of the time we're helping each other grow. And as you say, sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail, and that never changes.
Right.
Right. And you don't know what you're going to be one day to another. And, you know, once we see the value of it and we start pursuing it, you know, we're like, I want failure. I need to challenge myself. I'm going to put myself in a position where I know failure's coming. And because wisdom will come from that. And that's the nickname that comes out of it in the academy is wisdom seeker. And then you start to realize how important your community is, because one of the examples of that is I will try something new and I'll fail. I have my perspective of that failure, but there might be three guys sitting on the wall watching you roll, for instance, and I can go over to them and go, well, what'd you say? Well, they might say, you know, you moved your foot here. I go, I did not. They'll give you three different additional perspectives on what just happened. That's more wisdom. You know, you can learn from their mistake. And that's a challenge that we have in life. You know, sometimes we'll hear somebody that lived it and they'll say, don't do this. But every now and then we'll go on to do it anyway.
Right.
So the skill to listen to people who have lived it and done it and then implement that knowledge and wisdom into your life or into your game. And then you start to realize how valuable that community is, how valuable those mentors are. And once you see that value to the guys above you, you start realizing what you are to the guys below you. And, you know, that changes the whole behavior of the machine. So that's an example of the SOPs inside of the academy.
I like that. And it becomes family. It really does. I think truthfully, it becomes family. And you have to be able to trust, you know, your partners on the mats. You know what I mean? It has to be, you know, you don't want to be tangling with some guy that comes in and hates his life and hates his wife, and he's going to take it out on you that day, because then you're going to be out for 6 months with a broken, you know, whatever. No. So there's a lot of mental management that goes into the mats, because I know for me, like as I was training, I had a lot cooking mentally. Like when initially that's what took me to the mats in the first place. I was seeking empowerment and I was dealing with corrupt law enforcement agencies locally. And I had a lot of curveballs thrown my way during, you know, over the course of the startup of my business and as it evolved even years later. But during COVID especially, things had not COVID related whatsoever, but just I had all these things cooking, and it was just like, I've got to get a hold of myself, just mentally, spiritually, physically, all of it. And I, you know, finally ultimately landed on the mats, and that's what it gave everything back to me, you know, that I felt like I lost mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. It was like, it replenished everything for me. And that was, that brought a lot of value to my life, and I'll never forget it. I'll never forget just that first day, because every year, like my New Year's Eve is my birthday. My birthday happens to be close to New Year's Eve. It's December 22nd. And each year prior to my birthday for like the last 10 years, I had started, you know, I would challenge myself with something new every year. And I would always start 3 months because usually it takes about 90 days before you're in a routine. For me anyway, it's always like, yeah, you got to give it, you know, 3 months before you're willing to throw in the towel or quit whatever it is that you're trying because it doesn't work for you. But so I'd commit for 90 days to making different changes in my life over the course of 10 years. And I always like to, if I'm dropping some things, then I add some new things. You know, if some things aren't serving me well, then I cut those things out of my life. And then, so it's like a 90-day audit. I do that. What am I leaving behind? What am I adding to? And that particular year, it was jiu-jitsu. And so I had started just ahead of my birthday for that. And so, nice. Yeah, so I'm always coming up. I'm coming up on my anniversary now, 4 years. And so for jiu-jitsu, and I think that that's pretty cool. I think that, you know, anybody looking to level up in any aspect of their life, find their way to a great jiu-jitsu school, especially if they're in the Atlanta area, they should seek you out.
Yep. We're a little north side of Atlanta, but there's a lot of options. Speaking of COVID, you know, because we had a lot of new visitors coming to town. So we've had an influx of new academies all over the city.
Wow. I was going to ask you too, if you would elaborate a little bit for the audience on what Sifu means. I know what it means, but if you would explain, because as I introduced you, Sifu Alan Baker, what does that mean?
Well, basically father or teacher. And it's from the Chinese martial arts. And traditionally, in Kung Fu or Kung Fu was only taught inside a family. It wasn't often that you would share it with your neighbors. And so a lot of the titles in the systems were based on family members. Simo, mom, Sifu, dad, Sibok is uncle. So, and generally, you know, you can adopt it and there's some systems that will give it to you. And one of the systems that I was in the early 90s, I think by the time I got to a third degree, they were like, okay, you're officially a Sifu. And even though today I'm not probably known much for Kung Fu, you know, most people know me for the submission wrestling, jiu-jitsu, Thai boxing systems, but that's where that originally came from. And so it has been following me since the early 90s.
And so you bring up the boxing. So Muay Thai, that's also your instructor in Muay Thai. Do I have that right?
I actually started in a system called Burmese Bondo, and okay, today it's referred to as Lethaway. And then later I started to get involved with Muay Thai boxing. Master Sarasut, who really is one of the individuals that are responsible for bringing it into the United States. And Guru Dan and Asano was one of the people who helped him do that. I met him through Guru Dan. And he's my primary source for Muay Thai.
That's awesome. And also, notable Jeet Kune Do. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Again, Guru Dan. We have to give Guru a tremendous amount of credit. He had such a huge influence on me, but one of the systems that I'm certified under him is in Jeet Kune Do, Jun Fan Kung Fu. And he's also had a huge influence on how I look at training. You know, up until I met him, I had studied many systems just because I just love it. You know, there was one point where I was a member of every academy in the town I grew up in.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah. different night of the week, I'd be in a different part of town training. I just loved it. And, I thought I was doing pretty good until I got introduced to Guru Dan, and he, you know, he's a legend, and he is a true professor of really everything he does. And he has studied and learned and probably forgotten more than most people learn in their entire lives. He's done multiple different systems, and he's the one that, you know, started really introducing me to the Filipino Kali world, Filipino martial arts world, then Jeet Kune Do, which led to Wing Chun. I got introduced to Seafood Francis Fong, which is one of the reasons I ended up in Atlanta. I actually moved to Atlanta to get closer to Sifu and train. So
that's awesome. That's amazing. And not only do you have all of this martial arts expertise, but you also have mountaineering under your belt. You do rappelling courses. I know we just recently chatted about that because you are off doing that somewhere. Talk a little bit about what led you to that. Obviously, you're an adventure seeker and just a badass all around. You have many things under your belt, but what led you into that realm?
Well, in my teens, I trained at a lot of the schools in town because I'm bumming rides from mom and my friends to get there. And then, as I got a little older, I got a better job and started making a little more money. I could get a vehicle and I started traveling to the cities that were outside of the small town. And one of them, I would go see. He was really my first introduction to Chinese martial arts, Kung Fu. And he would teach out of a building that he would use as an expeditions company. That was his main job. And then he'd have martial arts classes, at night at this place. And so we would travel to see him. We usually drove up on a Thursday, and because it was a drive to get there. And then we'd, spend the night, we'd sleep in the school, get up the next day and come back. And he would say, "Hey guys, why don't you hang out this weekend and help me out with the clients?" And we're like, "Wow, that's super cool." Yeah. It's free labor for him, but we'd spend the weekends rappelling, climbing, mountaineering, diving. I mean, we were, don't want to get anybody in trouble, but we were scuba diving before we knew you had to be certified to do it.
That's amazing because I have here too. I wanted to bring up your scuba. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So later, I realized, wow, I've got to be certified to do this. So I had a unique late childhood, with the martial arts and at the time, I say this a lot, I thought that's how everybody grew up.
Yeah, right.
Doing this stuff,
Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah. Well, there was one time we were out helping with clients, and that's how he introduced us to navigation. Is he gave us a compass, and he had showed us what to do with it. And he goes, "All right, boys, I'll see you back at the academy." Jumps in the car and leaves.
Oh, my God.
This guy was a old school Vietnam vet. And, we'd probably get in trouble for that now.
Yeah. Then
we spent the rest of the day finding our way back, but we did it. And, I have a lot of memories like that from training with him and the guys at that school. But that's how I got introduced to it. And, when I got a little older and, I moved, ended up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, working for actually a guy that owned a Kung Fu school there. And so I started looking for more of the same, trying to find people that taught it because, I just assumed everybody did it.
Yeah.
That's when I started realizing, wow, a lot of people don't do this. It's not a normal thing. And I just pursued it, to the point where now I help instruct Rappel Master classes. We actually certify Rappel Masters twice a year. And then I'm a dive instructor. I don't teach the classes that often anymore, but I run the trips. So, I might go with a dive group and be a dive master on the trip and keep an eye on everybody. There was a time, late 90s, where I was doing a lot of cave diving. That was pretty incredible, diving in basically a mud hole in a tunnel.
Whoa.
I don't know that I'd go back and do it again, but it was an incredible experience, and it made me a better diver. And the mountaineering, I was introduced to it when I was younger, and I've just always loved the outdoors. I love orienteering, compassing. It's great, and you don't see a lot of it. I think it's important skills to have.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely trust you in that respect. And I don't think even just training jiu-jitsu, I don't think I would have took to jiu-jitsu had I not had the instructors that I had. That made a difference to me. Like it's a thing. Like there has to be that synergy or that, I don't know, that connection. And just, I just, luck of the draw got that where I went. And I think that I bet most of your students feel the same way. And definitely you have a trustworthy vibe about you, as far as like, if anyone ends up lost in the woods, you want to have that happen with Alan Baker. Exactly.
I'm going to stay lost for maybe a week before we do anything about it, because it's so much fun to be lost.
Exactly. But we'll get out alive.
Yeah. We'll eventually, you know, when we start running out of food, okay, now it's time to go. When exactly. The coffee runs out, it'll be time to go.
Now, where do these take place? Like, where do your, like, when you do, or in the, where has past dives taken place, your scuba or the rappelling? What are some of those?
Oh, wow. We dove all over the Caribbean. One of my favorite places is actually around Cozumel, Mexico. It's just, for me, a fun dive.
Yeah.
There's some, you know, pretty cool spots, and it's current diving, so you don't have to do a lot of work. You just drop in, and the current will just, you just fly along like Superman over the reefs, and, wow, you know, enjoy your day. And that's one of the reasons I like it. I've done some that you probably see more coral, like in Belize. That's incredible. But, you know, you're doing a little work to get there, and sometimes you're fighting currents, and a couple of spots they'll drop you in are relatively close to cliff face. And I've always, you know, since I worked for a dive shop as a dive master, I'm always worried about everybody else. Yeah. So anyone else that's in the water, you know, I'm like, okay, I feel like it's my responsibility to keep an eye on them, even if it's not. You know, I'm usually like the last one to descend, so I can see everybody. I'm usually hovering above the group just so, you know, like keep my eye on everything. It's just, you know, how I'm wired. But
it's that leaders eat last mentality. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That was like beat into me by my instructors growing up.
Yeah. So of all of these things, I'm going to ask, but I think I know, like, what is your favorite? Where does your heart lie the most?
Oh, well, training,
yeah.
Obviously, you know, those things are all like a normal, this sounds strange, but it's like a normal day at work.
Yeah.
And I have this conversation with Jen a lot of times, you know, she's like, well, people want to have a chat with you about this. And I'm like, why? That seems boring to me. And she's like, not everybody does that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay. They don't. Outside of that, I mean, I love training because of all of the positive things that comes out of it, but challenge and growth, much like yourself. You know, I like to make sure that I'm getting outside the box. I'm doing things that are challenging to me, that force me into the unknown. You know, and I think we actually spoke about this. One of those things is speaking. And that's, you know, one of my coaches, Jay, who challenges me in that, you know, he's like,
Jay Redman.
That's right.
Jay Redman. He's one of my coaches in the Legacy Tribe, just so everyone knows.
Yeah. You know, Jay is an incredible speaker, and he has a incredible story. You know, you hang out with that guy, and you know, you're like, oh, I want to get on stage, but you listen to him and his story, you're like, dude, my story's not that good. Wow. I mean, who the hell am I?
Definitely feel like that, but you should not. But yes, Jay's an amazing public speaker, and he's just inspiring and enthusiastic, but as are you. I'm inspired by your podcast every day, and just knowing you. You know, I already know a lot of these things about you, but I was rereading it again today, and I was getting all, like, worked up just introducing you. I was like, I'm not going to do it justice. I'm like, this guy is amazing. Like, you have so much to offer your students, and I love that that your passion lies in teaching, in training, and that's in everything that it encompasses. But, yeah, back to the speaking. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but, yeah.
Yeah, the story is, you know, I had done it with in the protection industry. I've been a bodyguard for almost 17 years and work at one of the bodyguard schools here in the U.S. Teaching. And so I have done speaking and got up on stage. And most of that was related to what I do, you know, defensive tactics, protections. That's pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
And then Jay, two things he did. One is we were, you know, like a coaching session, and he's digging and wanting to know elements of my life. He goes, tell me what's happened to you in your life. And yeah, I got around to explaining something to him that I probably hadn't talked to anybody about since I was like 19 or 20 years old. And it, I had a pretty severe car wreck, and you know, it was brain injury. I actually, not many people know, but they're going to know now. I have an implant that holds my nose in place because of it just destroyed all the bone in the nose. So they had to put something else in there. And I had buried it. I had, you know, I hadn't talked about any of this until Jay. Jay's like, tell me your story. No, that's not it. Tell me something else. No, that's not it. And I'm sitting there pausing for a second. I go, am I really going to tell this dude that, you know, this badass Navy SEAL? Okay. I was like, well, what about this? And he's like, tell me about that. And I haven't spoken about it in decades. And I'm literally getting emotional in front of this badass talking about it because I had a passenger and she was severely injured. And wow. He goes, that's the keynote. That's the story. And I was like, holy cow, you got to be kidding me. And he had his speaker summit coming up. And he's like, you're coming to the speaker summit, and I want you to get up on stage and speak, and you're going to talk about this. And, you know, I live in Atlanta, and I was in Virginia Beach, and I had driven up to hang out with him. And I'm on my way back, 10 hours plus of sitting in the truck going, I'm not doing this.
Right. Okay,
I'm not going to do that. Okay, I'm doing it. There's no way in hell I'm going to do that. That's just... So I did that the whole drive back. And when I got to Atlanta, I realized, you know, the bigger picture is I felt so challenged about this. I was really struggling to, you know, do it or just say, screw it. You know, you don't have to. I'm in a pretty good place in life. But that, when I realized that, I was like, that is exactly why I'm going to do it. Just because I don't want to, not for any other reason. And I said, okay, I'm in. Sign me up. I'm going to do it. And way outside my box. I had spoken before, but just, you know, I think that was the first one that was self-improvement, motivational type of presentation. What a challenge. You know, I, and you know from speaking that you'll put a timer on and you have to practice. And every time for the first couple of months, you know, I'm like, what the crap, dude? I mean, where's all this coming from?
Yeah.
And so, Jennifer, you know, I was like, look, I'm going to tell you the story. I didn't even tell her what I was doing. I said, I'm going to tell you the story. And, you know, I'm getting emotional halfway through. She had never seen this ever. And so I'm okay, practice. And I went to the academy. I have this young lady, Iris, who has ran the office in my academy for probably 23 years now. And she's like, we refer to her as my little sister. She thinks she knows everything about me. And I was like, I'm going to tell you this story. It's going to be a challenge. And she's like, probably never seen a tear in my eye. Maybe because I stubbed my toe on the mat once, you know. Same thing. And she's just sitting there like in shock. And I'm going, I got to get this out because I got to do this presentation. So that's what I did for 2 or 3 months until I got to the point where it's processed. And now I can actually tell the story. And, you know, it was about a 45 minute to an hour long presentation. I go back up, show up at the speaker summit. And the day before I'm supposed to go up, Jay comes up to me. He did this to everybody there. He goes, okay, are you ready? And I was like, yes. He goes, all right, I want you to speak for 15 minutes. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, whatever you got to do, get ready. You're only going to talk for 15 minutes. And, you know, because part of the summit is to challenge you.
Right.
Put you in situations where you got to figure things out and work on your feet and change on a dime. But we were ready and we did it. And, you know, I got really good feedback. I was one of the good presentations. So I'm going to go back next year.
Well, I'm not shocked that you were one of the good presentations and you got good feedback, because I think you probably were underestimating yourself, which is what I do too. I don't like it. I would rather go skydiving like 30 times in a row than get up on stage. It's not my thing. I push, you have a podcast too. I think it's great. I think you're a great speaker. I think you're a great podcast host. And that was exactly why I put my podcast together, because I wanted to create change and be an agent of change myself.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and there's just a message to get out there. I like inspiring others and helping others. I had a lot of experience to share. That was the point of my podcast, but I didn't want to have that you don't want to be on the platform, but you want to do the thing kind of thing. You get what I'm saying. I know you do, but I just so it was a push for me. It was a push for me to I started doing those things like getting on the mats and getting involved in jiu-jitsu and jumping out of planes, going skydiving and facing fears and doing, if there was something I didn't want to do, I made myself do it. And so that's where all that comes from. And even the podcast.
I think Will Braunham. He works with Bedros too.
Yep.
He is, Will, if you're out there, he is the reason that I started the podcast. Several people say you need to do it. Usually we'll see Will on a Zoom call once a month. We'll get on and you could call it, we're coaching each other. We each bring a nugget of gold and we just exchange. And I was on one of those Zoom calls with him and he goes, when is this happening? When are you going to do it? I'd put it off. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And he said, look, I want you to no guest, just you, speaking into the lens for the first 100 days. And I was like, are you kidding me? He goes, it'll make you better. And he flat out said, you're going to suck, but by the time you hit that 100, you'll be way better. I was like, okay, I just won't tell anybody I'm doing it.
Right.
Because nobody will know.
Right. I like that. And yeah, I do know Will. I asked him to be on my podcast and he agreed to do it, but he had to climb Mount Kilimanjaro first. And I'm not even kidding.
That was awesome. Yeah.
I literally asked him and he was like, yes, because I had just met with Bedros and I was sitting there talking to him about, because you and Will are like two of my favorite guys, obviously, and Redmond and Henson and Killian too. But I mean, like you and Will, I think are up there. And I wanted to ask Will to be on the podcast, and Bedros was like, just grow up here and ask him. So I did. And then he was like, I will be on your podcast. He was like, but I got to climb Mount Kilimanjaro first.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was doing it until he was on the way out there. I think I texted him and he goes, let me get back to you. I'm going to climb this mountain. Like, are you serious?
Yes.
I love that.
Yes. And he's got his own podcast too, Naked Warrior Recovery, his brand. And I'm now all of a sudden the name of his podcast is escaping me. It's The Naked Warrior, isn't it?
I'd have to look.
Shoot. Now it's escaping me and we both should know.
Yeah.
That's not good. Anyway, we'll get it right at the end. We'll put the link up. But that's awesome. And that's inspiring. But maybe I'll have to do that to myself too. I always have a guest on, but I think that there's something to that one-on-one personal relationship development with the camera lens.
Yeah. I've recently started bringing one of my business partners, Bob, on with me. And it's been great. We just did one on out of position fighting. We kind of go between self-improvement, that sort of thing. And then we'll have one on something related to combat or fighting. And lately they've been coming from YouTube and all the wonderful comments that you get off of YouTube for videos. And so a lot of the questions were to deal with an out of position situation. So we did a whole podcast on it and actually, I thought it turned out pretty good.
That's awesome. I think I've watched a couple of them with Bob. Now, one of the ones I was I shot you a text the other day because I was laughing. I had watched an episode, and I think this was with Bob, but you were talking about you were having dinner with Jen, and she was giving you the business because you like to clean as you go, or you clean right before you eat. And I do the same thing. So I had to laugh. I was in my garage working out at 2-3 in the morning, and I have a little a little treadmill or something that I walk on. And I almost fell off that thing laughing because I thought I was the only one that did that, because I will clean as I go. And right, then I eat. And so
normally she loves it because I'm the one cleaning up.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
But this particular instance was kind of an at home date night.
Right.
So as you know, we're making something nice and the table set, and here I go. This really? Tonight you're gonna do that. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly, you know, it's like the moment that you're like, I'll let it. But you make the choice.
Right.
So yes, tonight is the most important night to do it.
That was a good one though. I loved that. I was just cracking up while I was watching it because I was like, man, I thought I was the only one. Yeah, that's a habit. It's a habit of mine. I've always done that since I was like a kid, because our parents taught us, you know, to cook and like be self-sufficient, do all that stuff. And I don't like a mess at the end, because after I eat a nice good meal, I just want to relax. I don't want to have to worry about all that. Yeah. And I definitely don't want to have to worry about it when I wake up the next day.
Right.
So yeah, I get it. That's awesome. Gosh, Alan, so what projects do you have coming up? What are you looking forward to in the new year? It's creeping up on us here.
Wow. How much time you got?
I know you have a lot cooking because we chatted, and I opened up the invitation. Anytime you want to come to Michigan, you know, you and Jen, whatever, I have a place 5 minutes from the studio, you know, finished guest house with Jim in the garage. You guys are more than welcome to come.
Yeah, but I'll definitely keep in mind we're booking next year now, and we're trying to take all the requests and make them work somehow, but you never know. Hopefully that we'll route through there, and we'll definitely come visit.
Yeah, absolutely. What's on the books this year?
One of the major things we're doing is, as I mentioned earlier, I'm one of the instructors at the Executive Protection Institute, and it's probably the oldest bodyguard in the bodyguard school in the United States. And I started to get involved with them about 15 or 16 years ago, and they were looking for someone to handle the defensive tactics side. And you know, they would bring someone in who would teach his flavor, and then, you know, they would try it out. It didn't work so well. And then by the next school, well, let's get someone else. So at the time, I was just the next flavor. But what I did is I came in and I said, I want you to teach me what you do. Show me everything, how you dress, what you drive, how you walk, how do you do your protection. And they put me through the school, which is an incredible school. And then I started doing details and doing work for them. So I got to immerse myself in the culture. And after that, I designed the program from the inside out. I built it specifically around the protection agent and what they do. And I've been teaching that at the school twice a year for about 15 years now. And, you know, I have had tremendous amount of requests to do a train the trainer on the program. To teach instructors. And I've always said, no, I'll come teach, because I enjoy like coming to visit you and staying in your guest house. That sounds super cool to me. I love traveling. I love meeting people and training. It's, you know, so I'm like, I'll do it. It's fun. But this year we had several requests, and you know, we had a business strategy meeting, and I threw it on the table with the team and said, what do you guys think about this? And they loved it. All of them immediately, you know, it's like a plate of peanut butter. They all dove right into it.
That's my favorite snack.
Yeah. So we decided that we're going to do it. And, you know, which that you understand, building business, there's so many logistics, the websites, the, you know, collections, marketing. So we are throwing ourselves into that now and getting everything set up. To do it in the new year. We're actually ahead of schedule.
Amazing.
Such an awesome team, man. You know, they're just incredible. What they've done to the website so far, I did not expect to have it where it is. But that is one of the major things. And second to that, you know, I have three video archives on the website. One's jujitsu related. One is civilian tactical, which is more self-defense related. And then the Warrior's Path archive. And I always get a lot of requests for the systems that I've always taught at the academy. Filipino Kali, Wing Chun, Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah.
We've decided to build that archive on the internet for next year. And that's one of the reasons we're spending the entire month of January recording. Almost every day has something listed, but that's okay. We're going to get that built and probably launch it, I'm hoping, by the end of the first quarter of next year. So that's probably the two biggest projects. And then be releasing book four next year. Yeah.
Congratulations.
It's going through editing now. It's the biggest one I have written, which surprised me. You know, it takes effort to write, and I am not a writer. I'm a knucklehead, right? I grew up punching things and smashing stuff, and that's why we need editors.
Yeah.
But this one took no effort. It just came out of me, and it's on building your own self-education process, which is something I did with my entire life. You know, I realized at some point that the system really didn't do me any favors.
Yeah.
You know, it turned me into a cookie cutter version of everybody else in line.
Yep.
And in order to progress and vibrate at a higher level and become more, you have to take control of your education and your growth. And one of the best things to do is have a intelligent, organized process to do that. And that's what the book's about. So that's going to be coming out next year too. So.
Well, I love that tailor-made and customization for education. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, I talk about the things I do for self-education and people think I'm nuts. And I could be nuts. I mean, Jen says I'm nuts, but
I'm my own special kind of crazy, but I have no official diagnosis.
I like your crazy. Just the fact that you get up at 2 a.m., you've checked me with that one. I was up at like 3:44, and I thought I was doing good this morning.
I'm my own unique blend of crazy, but no official diagnosis that I know of. But yeah, no, if you guys get out this way ever, like I said, it's a standing invitation, and you'll never be off your regimen, because I have the mats in the garage. It's heated and cool. Sweet. There's a gym in there, and the studio is 5 minutes, so you can still do your podcast, and we've got multi sets here in the studio, so we can set you up.
Well, if we do this, we're going to be doing a lot of recording.
Yeah.
Content. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Plenty of content to record here. Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem. What are some of the links that our audience can find you at?
Probably the main one is the website, sifualanbaker.com, SIFUALANBAKER.
You're on Instagram, isn't that right?
Yes. Sifu Alan Baker on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn as well.
Man, Alan, today has been a great discussion. I'm so honored that you agreed to be a guest on the podcast here at the Inner Circle Studio.
I'm honored to be here, man. Man, that went quick.
Yeah, it did.
It's good. It's like, wow, it seems like 2 minutes.
Yes, I could go on and on with you. We've got to definitely have you as a series regular on the Inner Circle.
Anytime, man. This is great. Yeah.
Well, you and Jen are always welcome here in the Metro Detroit area, so I can't wait to catch up with you again.
And if you hit Atlanta, let me know, man. I got a place for you as well.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Well, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
Yes, thank you. It's an honor.
All right. Well, we'll be catching up soon. And for more on Alan, just hit up those links. And if you like the Inner Circle On Air, hit like and subscribe. That's a wrap.